Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, March 18, 2018. I'm Benjamin Baya, and joining me today is my freaking awesome co-host, twin brother, and best friend, John Abaya.
And woo-mate, I like to call us since 1984. I've been bragging about mate? That. Woo-mate.
Like woo-mate.
No, womb, like mother's womb. Womb. Yeah, been yeah, in the yeah, mother's yeah. womb since 1984.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a while, Ben.
It's been a while.
Like a long time yes. since we did a podcast or episode for this wonderful podcast. It feels like almost 3 weeks
it has since been we had weeks,
a recording.
Yes.
A lot happened in the last 3 weeks.
Yes.
A lot of movies dominated the box office, apparently.
Yes, a lot. And a lot of political things happened.
I guess you could say. Yeah. That too. Yeah.
But we're back.
Weather-wise, too. It snowed here in our neck of the woods. I was surprised.
Yeah, it did. A little bit.
We didn't talk about that in a while. No. Like, all the weather reports I've been giving, I didn't expect snowing to be the thing that I'll mention any of these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was kind of cool. It's weird driving in snow. In a vehicle that wasn't really built for snow. And then the snow is probably like at least 1 or 2 inches thick. But it's only in certain areas around where we live. And in other areas, there's nothing.
What like, it's vehicle, just might I ask?
I drove a van. Like, it's not made to drive in snow. Like, okay, so it's not really bad snow, too. It's I'm exaggerating. It's not like Wisconsin or, you know, like really
Tahoe.
Bad. It's just this, Tahoe. It's really just something that our city never experienced in a long time. And it's just weird to see it in my lifetime to actually see it snow.
Yeah. Yeah, snow. Let's give it up with snow, guys.
Yes. High five, everyone.
The rapper from Canada.
Round of applause for snow.
Too.
The rapper, right?
From Canada, yeah.
Yeah, from Canada.
So that's what you've been doing. I've had a lot of changes in my life lately.
What are those changes? Ask a question.
Anyway, I am engaged this past week. I was engaged. I'm just tell a quick story. It's pretty funny. I don't know if anyone will laugh. But Christina, that's my fiance's name, her and I went to a Kings and Heats game. And originally, I wanted to propose to her, you know, the whole, like, it's kind of corny, like the Jumbotron, but I didn't thought it was a good idea, so I backed off. And then she actually proposed to me on the Jumbotron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was a bit embarrassing because the announcer was saying, like, oh, look at her. She's doing it to the guy. I guess I know who wears the pants in the relationship. And I felt very embarrassed. I laughed, kind of embarrassed. But later in that evening, I actually had another plan to propose, and we ate at this wonderful restaurant in Sacramento, and I actually had the ring and the cake, and then that's how I proposed to her.
That's like a classic movie bit, right?
Yeah,
put
I know.
The ring in the cake. It's either a ring in the cake or a file to get your friend out of prison.
Yeah, yeah. That's the two things that usually
that's their do. Other
yeah,
cake,
that's
right?
The other thing we're gonna probably do later on in our life is that but anyway, it was a little of misunderstandings. It's a little bit comical and magical at the same time. Overall, I just really wanted to spend my life with her, and I love her and everything. So yeah, shout out to her. I'm engaged.
Oh, shout out to her.
Yes,
shout out to Christina. Yeah.
Other than that,
round of applause for Christina. Huh? Snow and Christina.
Yeah, shout out to Snow, the rapper, and Christina, my fiance. That's about it. So that's a great story, I guess you could say.
Really wonderful story. It's very touching. So did the Kings win?
I think they lost.
That's bad news.
Yeah. It was during like the halftime. So. other than that, I think that's it. So if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give an impression of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week. And we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the starting of our 18 freaking awesome things in 2018. I think we have at least one thing. I don't know, John, what you have, if you're prepared to put something on the list. But before all of that, we do have a trailer talk. This week's trailer talk is Sorry to Bother You.
Hey, Cash, how much longer I gotta wait for my money?
God made this land for all of us. Greedy people like you wanna hog it to yourself and your family.
Me and my family?
Yeah.
Cash, I'm your f***ing uncle.
I just really need a job.
40 on two.
This is telemarketing.
Stick to the script.
Hey, hello. Mr. Davison, Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regal View.
That is a clip from the trailer. It is written and directed by Boots Riley. He's well known in the hip-hop community for being in the band The Coop. Very late 90s, early 2000s. Well, that's how I know about them. Think of The Roots or Farside, mm-hmm. like any of those groups that has a band. The film stars Lakeith Stanfield, better known for Short Term 12 and Get Out. He was one of the characters in Get Out. Tessa Thompson, Valkyrie from the new Thor Ragnarok. Jermaine Fowler, I don't know where is it from. Amari Hardwick, Terry Crews, Patton Oswalt, David Cross, Danny Glover, Stephen Yeun, and Armie Hammer. Oh wait, is it Stephen Yeun?
Really nice Yeun, list of Yeun, right. cast.
Yeun? Huh? It's Stephen Yeun, huh?
Yes, yes. R.I.P. Glenn.
Yes. So this is the plot synopsis from IMDb. In an alternate present-day version of Oakland, telemarketer Cassius Green discovers a magical key to professional success, propelling him to a macabre universe. Yeah, it looks cool. John, what's your thoughts about the trailer and whatnot?
I did not know about this synopsis for this movie. I didn't know it's like playing around with an alternate present day and this different universe. Like, is it literally that, or is just the way they describe the movie?
It's the way I think to insert some, some surreal visuals, I guess you used to say.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a perfect word for this trailer. With the, it's really amazing the way it looks. I love how the way it looks. It is very surreal. Not sense like The Spotless Mind or was that movie with Jim Carrey? Anything that Michelle Gondry does,
yeah, it's
like it feels like that, but this very hyper realism, especially when they do certain scenes in the trailer that really like captures your eye and stuff. I'm really liking how this trailer looks. I really hope the movie is really good. I really like what's his name, Lakeith Stanfield.
Yes.
Currently since Atlanta and Get Out and I know 12. He's in that Death Note movie, but let's not talk about that right now. But yeah, he's like a star rising right now, and it's cool, pretty cool just to see him getting all these different movies and different parts too. They're not always the same. It's all really different and stuff like that. So it's I'm going just to see his performance really, and just to see how he does it. And even Tessa Thompson, after I recently just watched Thor and I really loved it, so I was like, wow, just keep this boat moving with these two actors and see how well their chemistry can be shown on the movie screen. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I really love the trailer. It's something that this year that I was like, wow, this is very different. I never seen anything like this. So yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, I think the synopsis is really unique. It's setting up some interesting discourse and some really great satire. Can't wait until like the conversation behind this. When I remember last year when Get Out came out, there's a conversation about that. And then about microaggressions and whatnot. And then I'm wondering how this is going to, start some conversation about, race issues and social issues and whatnot. I like how, what you said, it's how surreal and vibrant the colors are that's used. Shout out to the cinematographer, Doug Emmett. He's done some amazing work. I don't know if you ever watched The Edge of 17, the movie, John, if you ever watched that movie.
No.
The one I love.
That you love that movie?
No, the movie, The One I Love.
Okay. I was like, wow, I never really heard you talk about that movie before.
Let's see what's other ones. I think that's about it I could think of right now that I've watched of him, from him. But yeah, so I can't wait. I think the film comes out earlier. Later this year, mid in the summer, July 6, 2018. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so this film was distributed by Annapurna Pictures. John, going to you, what you've been doing this week, you have something that connects this film with what you've done this week or this 3 weeks.
Yes. So talking about Annapurna, the picture company, they make a lot of good movies that I'm a fan of. I can't name off the top of my head, but I always see their logo. If you don't know this thing, this logo of their picture company.
Can I name some?
Which one?
Can I name some films that they've...
Oh, yes, but their logo is an A, like a typical A, like just a blurred version of the A.
Yes.
So name some films.
They usually produce a lot of indie films, or considered indie films. They're not like, well, no, but they're all originals. The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson, Her from Spike Jones, recently 20th Century Woman from Mike Mills, Phantom Thread again from Paul Thomas Anderson. There's a lot. I think this year, Richard Linklater will have a film coming out where it's called Where'd You Go, Bernadette. Mm-hmm.
And the hit animated film Sausage Party.
I know, that is actually, I saw that just right now, and I was like, oh wow, they did that too.
they need to diversify their portfolio.
Yeah, so they've been producing a lot of great films lately, and can't wait until this film comes out. Or this is what we're going to be talking about too right now.
So yeah, besides films, they also do an interactive division. And interactive, I mean by video games or apps on your phone. So today I'll be discussing about a new game they just recently released called Florence. I think that's how you say the name. Florence?
Is it with a question mark?
No. It's called Florence. It's a really nice 30-minute game. It's literally 30 minutes. Not literally, but you can finish the game within 30 minutes. It's not a game. It's more of an interactive storytelling. And the best...
Are those really games, though, John?
Wait, which one
are those really games?
I know. Let's talk about that more.
Yeah.
Are these really games? But yeah, it's a wonderful game about being in love for the first time and just how your life is as a mid-20s, and you have this career, and do you think your life is good, but you find something better, and it can inspire you even though. I mean, it's about a person named Florence Yeun, and then, yeah, it's. I don't want to like give too much away, but I want to talk about mostly about the game mechanics. But if you love like interactive game storytelling, this game should be delightful for you. It's made by the lead designer of Monument Valley. I don't know if I've talked about that game in previous episodes. Then that's a puzzle game, but this one is more in vain. Like the best I hear people say, it's like a WarioWare game, and
whoa.
I didn't even think about which one.
I said, "Whoa, that's kind of cool."
Yes, so it's like these little mini games, each divided into different acts and chapters, and you just do these little mini games about her life, and it's really touching in some parts. Some of them, I had like flashback memories of that, like similar to that scene when. In Ratatouille, when the guy eats his like the Ratatouille for the first time, and his mind is zoop like
Go
that,
gets
flashed
mother's.
Back into him like a little kid. Yeah. And there's scenes like this in this game where it just made me feel like that. Oh wait, I remember this scene like in my life, or it reminded people that I know, like you, especially you and Christina, and Audrey's brother and his boyfriend Sean. It just like, oh, these things I seen in other relationships. And I was like, wow, this is cool. Like just to see these moments in other people's relationships too, and just how well they do the story, and how you a lot of people can maybe relate to it. Especially there's a certain turning point, and it can be There's many turning points in this game that they compact it in this little bite-sized thing that I think it's worth buying just to see this story unfolds. And the cool part too is there's no dialogue in the movie. It's not like you're reading something. It's all interactive storytelling. Like the whole thing is you touching the screen to move the story forward. And I think that's a cool idea. It's very inspiring. It makes me want to make games like just similar to this, just little bite-sized games that you tell the story and hopefully you inspire the person playing the game to do something with their lives.
Cool. I'm actually looking forward because I'm a big fan, but I don't think my my phone's memory isn't that great, so I think it's a little bit slower than usual.
It should run it. I mean, mine, I had to leave it charged. Because it drains my battery really bad because they recommend you playing the game with headphones to get the full experience, especially really nice headphones that you can hear the background noise. The music is really well done, and just the story is, I mean, the visuals are really well put together.
Okay, cool.
Yes, and other than that, I've been also reading another, or not reading, also I watched a movie of a woman's name again, surprisingly, of Veronica, that recently came out on Netflix. So it's a horror movie that Netflix published called Veronica. It's a Spanish horror movie. The synopsis on IMDb is, in Madrid in 1991, a teen girl finds herself besieged by an evil supernatural force after she played a game of Ouija with her two classmates. So, Arben, do you ever play the Ouija board before?
I've had, yes.
Oh, really? Yeah. I did not know this about you.
Yeah.
Are you a demon, Ben?
No.
How was your game with the Ouija board?
I didn't feel anything. There was nothing that I thought was, no one did. I think people were like moving whatever the coin, what we use. This is when we were young and curious and whatnot.
That's cool. Well, this one is a really cool, or not cool, very thrilling horror movie, you could say. Mm-hmm. It has the typical jump scares, but I think it's really well done. The person who directed this also directed some of my favorite movies, even your favorite movie. We reviewed it too in the past too, of the Record. So I don't even know if I'm saying that right.
Which Rec one? Series.
The Rec series. Yeah. Yes. So it's REC with the little red dot and the, I don't know what you call those, the brackets.
Yeah. I mean, it's Record, basically, but.
Yes. I mean, I think in the American version, they call it Quarantine. That's the American
version.
Well,
that's the remake.
Yeah. The American version.
You said version. So
Yes. All these movies are in Spanish, and it's very thrilling just to see the way the actors portray like their lives in Spanish and whatnot. Like the, not in that region. And this one is in Madrid. And it's kind of cool the way it's shot. And if you're very into like supernatural thrillers, this is a great, I watched this like right near when I, after watching Conjuring 2. And it's like a good, what do you call double that? Feature. Not back to back. What?
Double feature.
Double feature. Yes. It's a good double feature, especially the themes of family and stuff in the similar to the Conjuring 2. I totally forgot. So the director is Paco Plaza.
He co-directed the first two Rec films, and then he directed the third film.
Yes. And then the writers are Fernando Navarro and also Paco Plaza.
Yeah, which they're the ones that created the Rec series.
Yes. And then starring Sandra Escanina, Bruna Gonzalez, Claudia Placer, Ivan Chavro, and Anna Torrent, and Consuelo Trujillo.
Oh, you did that actually pretty good. Better than I would have been. Darren.
Oh, really? Yeah. my wife is Mexican, so I've seen some of these names many times in the family. I think it's a really well-done movie. There are times, though, that it is the some tropes are the same, but there's scenes in here that's really well done that I really love. There's a scene with a Simon game. I don't know if you play that game, the Simon Says game, the little robot thing.
Yeah,
with the
I've
red.
Had, yeah.
There's a cool scene that I think visually it was really nice, well done with that scene. And there are also really cool practical effects. They limit themselves with the special effects and went for practical. And there's like really cool, like Nightmare on Elm Street type of scenery that reminds me of that movie, but they did it really well and stuff like that. It's also, I just found this out at the end of the movie. I mean, they do it in the beginning of the movie. It says it's based on actual events. And then when you do research of what, after you watch the movie and do research, the actual events is very horrifying. But at the same time, it's all back in 1991. And it's the reports are very muddled. Like, it's hard to find actual stated facts from the police and whatnot, what happened in this case. Like, similar to other horror movies, even like Conjuring, they take the actual events and just stretch it a little bit, and they do the exact same thing here. That's why I say that it's a great double feature. Great double picture, or what is it?
Double feature.
Feature, sorry. I got confused for a moment, but yeah. Yeah, go out and rent it. Not rent it. Go out and subscribe to Netflix and watch this really cool horror movie right now.
Cool. I'm actually looking forward. I remember telling you about this film because I was like, my coworkers all watched it and I researched it. I was like, oh, it's created by the same people who made Wreck, and we're huge fans of that series.
I think because we're fans of him, I think this one will please you.
Is it more, nice, you know how like the third Wreck was more of a satire? More like, you know, horror.
No, it's straight. It's almost a great double feature for Conjuring 2. Okay. Like, if you love the way Conjuring 2 is
intertwined into it.
Yep. And then the way how the older sisters are defending the younger siblings in Conjuring 2, same thing. Like, there's that moments in here that reminded me straight from that one movie.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. In a scale of scares, one being like, you know, the worst, like not scary at all, like scary movie scary, and 10 being like, I don't know, what you consider is the scariest movie. What would you consider the scariest movie for yourself?
Back in the day, I thought Blair Witch was a really scary.
So from that, from scary movie to Blair Witch, what do you give it for when it comes to scares?
I think because they do stuff, if you're really religious and believe that the Ouija board can do stuff with it, it could be the most horrifying thing you ever watch. Like, I remember our nephew telling us that they did Ouija boards too in the Philippines, and just telling us stories where, like, you can't crumple, if you make a Ouija board with a piece of paper, you can't crumple it, or you get, you know, 10 years bad luck and stuff like that. Like, if you your mental state is like that, where you really believe in that, it can go up to 10. But because I don't really believe in the Ouija board, I personally think it's silly, but it still captures the fear really well, especially because the actress is a teenager and is playing a teenager in the movie. Just to see her coping with this, you know, also taking care of parents, it is a scary thing too. So I would say 7.
Okay, 7. Cool. I mean, yeah. Like, I feel like you and I are desensitized when it comes to scary movies.
Yes,
it takes a lot for us to be scared, but I'd still get creeped out when it comes to visuals. Like, I think
I think creepy is more the word I'm looking for than scary. Like, it is a creepy film that had me at night looking at the shadows and wondering, what is this?
That's like how, like, The Conjuring or, like, The Babadook would have done for me.
Yep, the shadowy figure that you don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Well, coming from that, I'm going to transition to something more lighthearted, John.
Okay.
That families may have want to watch. And they still have creepy visuals in this film. But this past couple, you know, we haven't been doing the podcast for 3 weeks. So from these 3 weeks, I actually watched A Wrinkle in Time, which is, you know, Disney's A Wrinkle in Time, if you want to say, directed by Ava DuVernay. It's a adaptation from Madeleine L'Engle's famous novel. I think a lot of us, I've read it when I was younger. I read the graphic novel from Hope Larson, which is really good.
I remember you giving it to me. Yes. And had me read it.
Yeah, and then the film stars Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, Gugu Mbatha-Raw. I always pronounce that right, but Gugu Mbatha-Raw. I don't know if this is going to, like, you know, be spoilers, but it also stars Zach Galifianakis and Michael Pena.
Unless they're playing themselves?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then Storm Reid plays Meg Murray, and then Chris Pine plays the father, Alex Murray. And then there's other characters, like Charles Wallace is introduced. This is his first film from Derek McCabe. Who's actually Filipino. Shout out to him. But yeah, so if you don't know, it's about Chris Pine's character disappearing. Then the daughter, Meg, and her brother, I always forget his name now. Charles Wallace and a friend go out between space and time to find him. And there's like the Tesseract. This is like one of the first. I remember when the Avengers had the Tesseract. I was like, oh, I remember A Wrinkle in Time had the Tesseract. I think that's fairly used in all science fiction genre films and novels and whatnot. So it's their adventures in looking for the father and whatnot. So there's a lot of criticism about this film not being that great. This is my Twitter, my tweet, I guess you could say, is say what you will about Ava DuVernay's adaptation. Not only it captured the imagination of Madeleine Laguelle's novel, but adds Madeleine's Laguelle novel, but adds modern themes about self-love and agency that's didactic and fantastical, which, while being sincere and empathetic, I loved every minute of it. So I'll expand on that one tweet. But visually, it is really great. There are probably some nitpicks about when it comes to the actual, like, visual effects, the CGI effects. I don't think they're that great when it comes to that. But there are some that are practical effects that are really great. I feel like I think she knows how to use color really well, and I think it's very vibrant because of that. The breakout star, of course, is Storm Reid, who plays Meg. I think without her emotional binding throughout the film, I don't think the film will work at all. And I think it has that catharsis. The catharsis plays off in the end, where you know the emotional, it will all wrap together really well. This book has been around for a long time, so you come to find out, like, you know, they find the father and whatnot. So I think it captured it really well. Other than that, I could see the complaints about being a little bit everywhere when it comes to plot. This is one of the books that was known for being the book that is hard to capture on film, because speaking of surrealism, there is a lot of surrealistic things happening in the film, and I think that takes a lot when it comes to CGI. And I don't know if they needed more time to render the CGI effects. I think there was visuals that weren't working well, and I think they could have done something else more practical. But I say support it. I think because of the diverse, not only because of the diverse cast, but this is I haven't seen a film where most recently where it's a little black girl with glasses and, you know, finding the father and whatnot. So, and having Ava DuVernay helming it all together, she's coming off of Selma and her indie films. Like, she's a independent director who's now, you know, in charge of this. And then recently, while we are recording this, she is going to do DC's New Gods. Mm-hmm. So, which is kind of cool, because she was the original director for Black Panther, but I think she suggested Ryan Coogler to do that project, because I think she wanted to do this for Disney instead of the Black Panther. And I always wonder, like, how would a Ava DuVernay Black Panther would look like? But I think if she only steps back a little bit, I think having her own voice, I feel like there's a lot of, you know, hands on A Wrinkle in Time, especially like when it comes to like Disney producers, where, oh, you need this, and then it's like it feels very drowned by like the aesthetic of Disney. And I feel like this is 100% how she wanted it, but it does feel a little bit uneven sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I love it, though. I love every minute of it. I mean, I could take those criticisms and still love the film. Are you looking forward to watching? This was originally our main discussion, but you didn't have time to watch it.
No. So, yeah, my time's limited, so my son actually wanted to watch this. Instead, I am borrowing the book from the library. I guess it's renting,
yes,
but we don't pay for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at the moment, we don't have the book, but I actually rented the book from the library. It should be coming in the next couple of weeks, I guess. It's a very, right at the moment, yeah, a lot of libraries are don't have any copies, because everyone's renting it right now.
Yes. I say also listen to the soundtrack. The soundtrack is really great. Like, it has Sia, Kehlani, Freestyle Fellowship, a band. It's, I mean, they're from Northern California, but it is a hip hop group, not band, but group that I've loved ever since. I think Ava DuVernay is like a huge fan of them, and Sade too is also on here. So shout outs to them and the soundtrack. Might I also add that although it's like doing terrible in the box office, continue, you know, still watch it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Speaking of surrealism, so during like the proposal, we actually went to like also Monterey too, and I'm a huge fan of Salvador Dali's, you know, paintings, his artwork, everything from his films, from his artwork. Like, I don't know if people know that I'm really into, have you ever seen like how I draw things, the persistence of memory when it's like melting clocks and whatnot. So he has you know, dozens of the burning giraffe and all these other paintings that I feel like are really great, and it captures a surrealism really well. So the film I watched, it's a second film. He collaborated with a filmmaker named Luis Buñuel, and the film I watched is La Gay Adore. I think it's in French. La Age Adore. I don't know how you say that in French, but in the English subtitles, it's The Golden Age or The Age of Gold. So it's written and co-written by his friend Luis Buñuel, which Salvador Dali also wrote. And it's basically about the modern life in the 1930s and then how they're tackling like the sexual conventions at the time, and also like the corruption of the bourgeoisie and the value system of the Roman Catholic Church. There are a lot of things going on in here. It's a pretty dense film, like I said, with a lot of surrealism and nuances. Overall, there are wonderful visuals, but unless you're watching it through the lens of like someone from the 1930s, it doesn't make much sense at all. Yes, there are some familiar themes that could relate to our modern times, but I think there are better films that could do it better. I can see how like modern filmmakers like Michel Gondry and Spike Jonze can be inspired by it. But at the same time, I feel like there's something here, but unless you could endure how, you know, how old the film is and whatnot, I don't know if you will like it. My fiance like fell asleep when we watched it, basically. I mean, we were really tired because we went from a hike, so she had the right to sleep. I told her, like, you didn't miss anything. There are some cool visuals. I think one cool visual I liked was that there's a character who works with the main character. He's the assistant, and then something happens, and then he, you know, kills himself, basically. On the screen, you hear the shot, it's like blackout, and then on the next frame, you see shoes on the ground and a gun on the ground, and there's a chair, but where's the man? And the camera pans up, and the man's actually on the ceiling without shoes. So it's like, that's the surrealism. And there's like this huge it felt like it was an ongoing, because Salvador Dali, he's obsessed with like giraffes, and there's like a scene where you could tell like it's a miniature giraffe thrown out a window. It's weird, it's kind of cool, and it's kind of weird. I say watch it if you're into that stuff, but skip it if you don't want to, you know, endure. there's some heavy things going on. That's why it's like there's something about, I don't know, I don't know if he was like against the Catholic religion or something, but there's a lot of that going on in here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
how long is this movie?
It's only an hour long, but so much is packed into that hour.
Like, does it feel like an hour?
It does, like, feel like an hour. It felt very long. Okay. It felt very like, oh, when is this going to be over? It felt like it should be a short film, but it's long. It has an actual plot to it. Like, he like migrated, the character migrates to like France and or Rome, or well, I forgot what country, and then he hangs out with the bourgeoisie, and then he feels the film is actually like a romantic film. It's supposed to be a romance film about the main character and his lover, and they're separated because of the church and whatnot. Yeah. Anyway, that is La Age Adore. The Golden Age or the Age of Gold. I think you can only watch it in. It's it also, I might add, in Monterey they have a Dali 17. So it's basically like a museum of all his artwork. But little did we know, the artwork is actually just replicants of his artwork. It's not like his actual artwork. There are actually some drawings that are from him, originally from him, but I think like 600 of it is like replicants. Like they...
What? Really?
Yeah, they're not. They're copies of his artwork that's posted on there.
Wow.
But yeah. So moving on, I think we're going to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is our list of 18 freaking awesome things in 2018. I think this is going to be short because I think we have the same... thing on the list, right? You're not gonna add anything that I know, like
no, I can't think of anything other than one that you're about to mention.
Yes. So this week's the first thing that we're gonna put on our main discussion is Donald Trump. I think he's a no.
No. When was this last minute thing?
No. We're not gonna put him on there. what we're going to put is actually made past $1 billion this past week. Worldwide, $1 billion. It's going to surpass probably Avatar when it comes to consecutive weeks of being number one in the box office. Is once again Black Panther, directed and co-written by Ryan Coogler, starring Chadwick Boseman. I mean, we talked about this, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o. Everyone else in there, I know I don't want to skip everything, but if you want to listen to our talking about this film, just I think it's the last episode we just did. Listen to that. But I think
you can just insert our review right here.
Yeah. But if people don't know, please watch it. Please listen to the episode. We talk highly of it. I think this is one of our favorite films so far this year, and looking forward to it, to breaking Avatar's record. I think it's going to break the record. It's close to being broken. I don't really care about that stuff, but it's kind of cool to see Ryan Coogler, a man that I've been like following for a long time since Fruitvale Station. Even before that, he had a short film. I forgot what is it called now. But he's from Oakland, and it was shot in Oakland. And I remember watching that short film when Fruitvale Station came out. I want to know what this guy directed when he was in film school. And it's just this really simple, like it's only like 3 minutes long, but it has a three act structure, and then there's a really great ending to it. You can find it on his Vimeo page. All filmmakers have a Vimeo page. But yeah, like I'm really happy that he's doing this, and I'm a fan of Creed too. So it's kind of cool to see him grow from, and then him and Ava DuVernay, like I remember reading stories of how they were editing their films right by each other in the Disney lot, and I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool to see.
That's cool.
Yeah, these two filmmakers who I followed and am inspired by, to see them do great things. But yeah, so you don't oppose that this is going to be a list. You agreed with it, huh?
Yes, I totally agree.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, I don't. Oh, okay. Sadly.
I think that's it for this episode. So John, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at the most organized Twitter feed of 2008 at Abaya Arts.
Cool. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all of us on your iTunes or anything else. You can find us on Twitter at TFA Now. You could respond to us. I think we have our goal is to have at least 500 people this year. I think we were trying to aim for that.
Yes.
To follow. We'll follow back.
Spread this episode around. Get those shares and likes.
Yeah, we'll follow back. I mean, as long as you're not a bot, especially a bot that is collusion with Russia and the government of the administration, we won't follow you. Any of that stuff, we're not going to follow. You could also email us at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. Find all our episodes on thefreakingawesome.com. I think that's it. Is there anything else, John, that you want to say?
No, just find us on iTunes and the apps.
And we're also on Facebook, right?
Yeah, we're still on Facebook.
Yeah, yes. I don't do the Facebook thing, but yeah.
At the freaking awesome.
Yeah, at the freaking awesome. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And this has been the Freaking Awesome Podcast.